Welcome to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, a view of culture, current events, and politics through a biblical lens, with your hosts, Neil Boron, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh, and John Rush. Now let's join the conversation.
Very happy to be back with you folks for another episode of the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast with John and Roger and, wait a minute, Neil, isn't it? Isn't it Neil? Neil Boron, I think. Neil Boron Live. Neil, hey, how have you been since we talked? It's been a while. It's great to have Neil back with us again, the happy grandpa. So how you doing, Neil?
Doing wonderful, and Blythe Elise is a sweetheart, and we are blessed.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, congratulations to you, Grandpa. And, well, this week, love to say we're going to talk about something really lighthearted and fun, but no, we're going to dive into the deep end of the controversial pool this week. We're going to talk about critical race theory. Critical race theory, of course, we know that this is something being taught and promoted in a lot of the schools. Now that schools are open again, kids are going back to school. Here we go with the critical race theory teaching being taught. You got a lot of parents in various school districts around the country that are upset over this. They're showing up at parent-teacher conferences and school board meetings and saying, look, I don't appreciate my children being basically taught to see themselves primarily through their skin color and to see their classmates through their skin color and to create this sense of division between white and black students, so that if you're black, you need to feel oppressed and look at white students as oppressors. And if you're a white student, you need to have some sense of guilt and realize that you're oppressing black students. And why are we injecting this into our kids? It's almost as though, with the transgender movement, you've got little boys who weren't confused about their gender. They realize that they're boys. They're playing with trucks and G.I. Joes. But then what happened is the school and the teachers introduced gender confusion to them. And before you know it, now suddenly they're confused about something they weren't before. And you take little kids, and as they're growing up, they don't care if somebody's white or black, or they play with each other, but we're teaching them now to start looking at people of other skin colors out of the corner of their eye. A lot of parents are upset about this, understandably so. Then we get to the military, and we see that critical race theory is being promoted in the military, which is creating that sense of division and breaking down the unit cohesion that's supposed to exist between comrades in arms. Now suddenly it's like, well, yeah, but the guy who's fighting next to me, yeah, but he's a black guy. Yeah, but he's a white guy. What in the world is going on with critical race theory? So we're going to explore all the different aspects of CRT, and certainly as Christians and from a biblical perspective, try to understand this as best we can. And I suppose one of the best places to start would be trying to even define what critical race theory is. And guys, from my perspective, and this probably is overly simplified, but I would love for each of us to kind of unpack our own understanding and definition of critical race theory. It seems to me, in a nutshell, that this is a theory kind of similar to the New York Times 1619 Project, but basically suggesting that racism, systemic racism, is woven into the fabric of everything Americana. This goes back to the founding of this nation. We were founded upon racism. We were built upon racism. And even today, all of our institutions, whether it's education, whether it's military, whether it's entertainment, whatever institutions we have today are basically systemically racist, and we teach people to look at everything through that racial lens. And part of that racial lens is white equals oppressor, black equals oppressed. And so that's kind of an overview of how I tend to perceive critical race theory being defined. That could be incomplete. There could be other layers to this. And so let's kind of go around the table and start with this if we could. And Neil, since you're back with us now after a couple of weeks off, it's great to have you back. Maybe you could kind of kick us off with this. How do you understand critical race theory? How do we even properly define it?
That's a great question, because I've heard it defined so many different ways, and it's kind of fuzzy. But in reality, I think it's a system by which people view other Americans. In other words, it takes the issue of skin color and race, and that becomes kind of the focal point of the prism through which all of American life is viewed. And it's sick. First of all, it's totally wrong. It's sick, but it essentially categorizes individuals into groups of oppressors and victims. You mentioned that word earlier. And so I know we're going to talk about it in more detail today, but I think it's categorically wrong and it needs to be opposed. And it is really not part of the fabric of what we are as true Americans. So I know there's more to say about that, but that's how I understand it.
Roger, how would you, if you're sitting on a plane and somebody says, what's critical race theory? How are you going to explain it to them?
Well, I think what Neil just said is spot on. I mean, in terms of the way I understand it as well, there are people who are looking to try to solve some very large problems that have taken place in the United States over the history of our nation. And boiling it down to one simple, as you noted, Bob, you know, the fact that whites are oppressors and blacks are the victims. And if you try to frame the argument that way, then it completely skews all of American history. You know, and obviously we've got warts. I mean, there's no question. Lady Liberty has a lot of black eyes and bruises. I mean,
sure.
Self-inflicted in many cases. There's no question about that. But the beauty of the American system, I keep coming back to, is the fact that we, unlike any other nation in the world, we can course correct on our own. We the people, government of, for, and by the people. And so when you take something like this and say, okay, well, we're going to try to talk about, you know, America's racist history, and there is a racist history in this country, but is it systemic? Is it always this way? I mean, the fact that leftists have a tendency to do this, it really reframes the narrative in a way that it's completely unwinnable. Over minimize this or oversimplify it, but it kind of becomes a heads I win, tails you lose. And that doesn't really help the argument at all.
Right. And John Rush, of course, Rush to Reason out of Denver, Colorado. John, same thing to you. In a nutshell, how would you even define critical race theory?
It's actually been around a lot longer than we all think. It's been highlighted a lot more lately, but the reality is it's been around since the 70s and early 80s. I believe it actually was created by some legal scholars of that time that basically wanted to talk about how the legal framework that we had in this country was quote-unquote racist, that, you know, there were certain things already by design in our legal system that were pitted against certain people of color, and then out of that comes what we now have today. So again, folks, this is one of those things where it's not new, it's just being highlighted. It's resurfaced, I guess, more now than it has been in the past, and I believe ultimately it's a tool that's used for division, not for what they actually tell you it's intended for. But this is a tool of division, not a tool of unity.
Okay, so let's explore then and unpack some responses to critical race theory. Because as I mentioned, you know, with schools open now, you got a lot of parents that are upset over this. They don't want their kids being taught CRT. Certainly many people in the military say we don't like this. And there is a perception that if you oppose critical race theory, then that means somehow you are denying racist, you know, ugly racist warts, if you will, of part of American history, that you're saying there's no such thing as racism, that racism has never been there before in this country, and that you don't think that slavery and racism and oppression and things like that should even be taught in the schools. Let's just homogenize everything. Well, that's not true, of course. But Roger, this is what we're accused of, though. Those of us who say, let's not teach critical race theory, the comeback tends to be, oh, so we shouldn't even talk about slavery, should we? We should just pretend that none of this stuff even existed. And help clear that up a little bit, that we can actually do both. We can acknowledge the ugly realities of American history and that racism is an evil that still exists, while at the same time saying we don't want to make everything in America hyper-racial to where suddenly everyone focuses on their skin color through the lens of oppressor versus oppressed.
It is interesting when you consider that many people in the LGBTQ community are trying to kind of line themselves up with, hey, we're the new civil rights movement. And quite frankly, the obsession over sexual expression on that side of the equation is just, it has never made any sense to me. I mean, we don't sit around here all day long talking about who and how we like to, you know, be intimate. I mean, but it seems like in the gay community, that's a huge part of who they are. And it's amazing how critical race theory does basically then just make us our skin color. And it doesn't really, it's not even ethnicity, you know, now it's not even cultural heritage. Now it's not even, like you're talking about, Bob, the fact that I would much rather see us as a nation do a better job of teaching American history as opposed to the regional American history that we all get. I mean, I grew up in California, so all of our American history was, yes, you know, we won the War of Independence, and now let's build missions because it's California history. But if I'd grown up in Alabama or Georgia or something like that, I'd see a whole different side of life because that's what the kind of history would be taught. I think we could bring the nation together more with regard to teaching about the wrongs that you just described without branding everybody in a certain way. I mean, it's kind of like saying every white is an owner and every black person is a slave still. And that was not the case even when slavery was legal. So, I mean, it's really disingenuous just to go to those polar extremes and then force everyone to play by those rules.
It's a good point. I'll tell you what, let's take a short break. We'll pick it up from there next. More of the National Crawford Roundtable podcast coming up next.
Be transformed by the Word of God with Alistair Begg and Truth for Life. Every weekday, Alistair Begg teaches the Bible through in-depth verse-by-verse attention to the Word of God. You can listen to Truth for Life on your local Crawford broadcasting station or listen online at truthforlife.org. Please support this important ministry with your donations at the truthfullife.org website or by calling 888-588-7884. And be sure to let them know you heard about Truth for Life from the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
Continuing this National Crawford Roundtable podcast with myself, Bob Duco, John Rush, Roger Marsh, Neil Boron. We're talking about all things critical race theory this week. And John, let's then go back and let's kind of take our way through history in America, if we could. I want to start back with the founding of this nation, then we'll eventually work our way up to a present day. We're all familiar, of course, with the New York Times 1619 Project, this effort to try to say that 1619 is really the true founding of America because this is when the first slaves were brought to the Americas, and so therefore, that's when we have to say that the nation was founded. It seems to me that this is just an effort to try to define America and America's founding as racist and built on slavery. The truth is, we all know this, slavery is an ugly, evil sin that's been around for just about the last 6,000 years of humanity. Ever since the Garden of Eden, you've had cultures and civilizations all around the world who have enslaved people from the Egyptians and the Hebrews and just about every culture around the world. It's wrong, but it's been woven into the fabric of sinful man. And you know, back in the 1600s, we were practicing this same kind of evil stuff as well. It was wrong, but I also think it's wrong to try to say that that's really the defining characteristic of the founding of this nation.
I agree. And again, you and I both, and Neil and Roger would agree, we're not giving anybody a pass, but you know, all of us have things in our past, whether it's us as a country, whether they're businesses we're talking about, whether it's us as individuals, there's things that we all have done in our past that, let's face it, we're not proud of. We learn from those things. We move on. You know, history teaches us not to do those again. I think it's important to continue to teach those in the proper perspective. The problem today, guys, is, and Bobby, you know this as well, is we're not really teaching it in that manner. We're basically wanting the country, us as white people especially, to run around and apologize, pay reparations, do all sorts of crazy things that frankly won't fix the problem of what happened, you know, 100 plus years ago, 200 plus years ago anyways. Can we teach it? Can we learn from it and let it not happen again? Yes. And by the way, all the while talking about the slavery that still exists around the world and some of the things that we're now doing in this country, which I believe green energy promotes some of those things, and yet you're not going to hear that in the classroom.
Yeah, that's a good point. Neil, what's your take on the perception that this country is really founded on the principle of racism and slavery? It's part of the ugly history of this country, to be sure, but is that really the tree trunk, the foundation of our land?
Absolutely not, and I think it's bizarre. I might have said this even before, I'm not sure, because I've talked about this issue a number of times, but that it's bizarre that progressives refuse to see that we've progressed in our country. Seriously. Right. I mean, no, that it, yes, it existed, and we need to acknowledge it. It is part of our history, and it's an ugly blot on our nation's history. But that's where we came from. That's not who we are today. Martin Luther King, 1963, you know, that we're to, in his I Have a Dream speech, that we're to judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And yet critical race theory causes us to have to look back at people's skin again to decide whether or not they're oppressed or oppressors. And I don't know. I mean, if you want to throw into this mix, maybe we can talk about it more later. But the idea of, just as one example, the idea of interracial marriage in the U.S., there's millions of interracial couples. There's tens of millions of interracial people. And so what does that mean? They're half oppressor, half oppressed? How do you define that? What is that actually all about? It is, none of this has anything to do with the color of people's skin, but critical race theory is based on that premise.
Yeah, it sure is.
Real quick, Neil, I interviewed a lady yesterday who's got the first lawsuit for her son in Nevada, talking about the very things that we're talking about right now. She's actually suing the school district, and she is actually half black, half white. Of course, her son then is, you know, half black, half white. Mm-hmm. And you know, we asked her that very same question, you know, are you oppressing yourself? Of course, we got a nice laugh out of it. But, you know, she was very, very much on our page on all of that and just, you know, realizing. And she's in the battle of this right now and what we're talking about and understands the craziness of it and the reality that this is not the way we should be teaching our kids today.
Yeah, and by the way, just glad that you brought that up, and thank you for asking her that question. And as humorous as the answer could be to some of us, you know, listening to that, like, this is absurd, this is ludicrous, you almost wonder what happens to somebody who's mixed race, mixed ethnicity down the road. Do they get dismissed from a conversation like this because they don't qualify as either? I mean, where do you go with this?
Right. Great point. And when you're talking about mixed race, which personally I don't like the word race anyway because we're all one human race, okay, exactly. But we'll say mixed ethnicity, I suppose. What do you do with how they tend to identify? Like, for example, Barack Obama, half black, half white, but he tends to identify as black because he looks more like a stereotypical quote-unquote black person. But you get Mariah Carey, who's also half black, half white, but she has less melanin in her skin, and so she tends to be perceived more as a quote-unquote white person. So most people would look at her, think she's white. Most people would look at Barack Obama, think he's black. But guess what? They're both equal. They have both are equally black and equally white. Of course, both made in the image and likeness of God. But it's this identity politics almost that has taken over so much of the liberal progressive left. And it divides our country. It causes, it really creates more racial division. And it seems to me the left talks constantly about, let's have unity and coming together. And, you know, we didn't like Donald Trump because he was so divisive. And it's like, are you kidding me? Everything you guys are doing is trying to divide us and trying to pour lighter fluid on racial tension that already exists in this country. Why in the world fight this hard to make it worse? Tell you what, let's take another short break. We'll continue this conversation next here on the National Crawford Roundtable.
Dr. James Dobson left a successful career in academia to preserve and promote the biblical family in America. The radio broadcasting ministry of Dr. Dobson spans over four decades, earning him 17 honorary doctorate degrees and an induction into the National Radio Hall of Fame. Today, Dr. Dobson continues to champion marriage and parenthood through Family Talk. Listen every weekday at drjamesdobson.org and be sure to reference the National Crawford Roundtable podcast when asked how you listen to Family Talk.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable podcast with Neil Boron of Neil Boron Live from Buffalo, New York, Roger Marsh of The Bottom Line from the People's Republic of California, John Rush from Rush to Reason out of Denver, Colorado, myself, Bob Duco, Bob Duco Show out of Detroit. We're talking about the very sensitive issue of critical race theory in this week's episode. And so let's talk a little bit about, as we kind of come forward. We recognize slavery, of course, is an evil. We know that. Nobody is saying that that shouldn't be taught in the schools. Of course, it should be. History should be taught in the schools. But that kind of moves us up through history and in this country through the slave trade. One of the things that's part of the slave trade, Roger, that I've noticed hardly anybody ever talks about is that black people, believe it or not, were not the only ones that were slaves. I know this sounds crazy, but there were white slaves, mostly black, of course, but there were white slaves. But even if you look at how these slaves got to America in the first place, we tend to think that white Europeans went to Africa and started rounding up slaves. That's actually not what happened. Africans rounded up their fellow Africans, put them in chains. You had black people putting black people in chains and then selling them to white Europeans, who then, of course, sold them to Americans as well. And so it just seems to me the problem here is not so much a white or black problem, but that it's a problem of sin and a problem of evil. This is a sin problem since the Garden of Eden, where anyone who can oppress someone else because they're able to will tend to do it in the flesh. We've seen this as part of the sin problem in the world. I just don't think we ought to make it exclusively about white and black, because historically it's actually really not.
Yeah, and when you consider that there were freed black people who were living in the United States, and many of them owned slaves. I mean, right. When you think about the Tulsa Race Massacre that happened in 1921, and what was going on in Oklahoma is the black community, that they called it the Black Wall Street, that was there. Many of those people were freed slaves who were owned by Native Americans. I mean, so you get right down to it. I mean, it's really just the white-black oversimplifying of this dilemma really is kind of disgusting. You get right down to it, and you know it's just one of those things. Yet again, I don't remember who brought this up, but I wanted to circle back around to it, I think, because it's germane to this point, which is the left is driven by feelings and intentions, you know, and they don't ever really question their motives. It's just, how does this make me feel? You know, I was reading a couple of posts earlier today. We see the border crisis that's going on right now, and we see the number of Haitian people who are, you know, coming to the border, and, you know, they're underneath the bridge, and now they got the mounted police on here, and a friend of mine who was pretty passionately anti-Trump and so therefore pro-Biden, you know, posted a picture saying, "What have we become?" And I said, "What do you mean, what have we become? What are we? I mean, we are sinful, fallen people in a sinful, fallen world." And the idea that there has been any goodness apart from Christ in anybody, in anyone's heart, is really ridiculous. So if you try to boil this down to a good versus evil, you know, oppressor versus oppressed, I mean, did that happen? Yes, it did. Does it speak for entire generations and the whole system? No, it doesn't. Are there some individual parts in the system, though, that should be addressed? Absolutely. I mean, you can see where problems become patterns, and the patterns become unbreakable in certain parts of the country. But that doesn't speak for us universally, and it certainly doesn't speak for the entire nation, I believe. This is, again, it's a broad stroke that makes everybody feel good. Well, if we reframe the conversation, now we'll win more and they won't win as much. Hey, and I'm coming to you from the People's Republic of California, where I'm a minority, by the way. I mean, the majority of people who live in the state of California are Hispanic. And so, you know, and I don't get any free stuff. I mean, I should, right? I mean, we're trying to lift minorities up out of poverty. But, sure. You know, that's where I am. And I'm also a beneficiary of Loving versus Virginia as well. So, I mean, quite frankly, you know, the world does look different to people who are just trying to pinpoint it and saying, "Oh, well, Roger, Lisa, how does your relationship work?" Well, it works because I'm a man and she's a woman and we love each other and we love God. I mean, that's right. How it works. That's how it's supposed to work. But we know there was a time in this country when people would look at us and say, "Well, you're illegal," you know, and you got to sit there and say, "Well, okay, I can't help you with the hate in your heart." But, you know, this, it's all
right,
about.
And real quick, Roger, real quick, there was a time even in the church where that would have been frowned upon
right.
as well, which frankly was wrong also.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So, I mean, it's all about course correcting. It's all about wanting to do a better job of educating, to root out evil and to right wrongs, no question. But to frame it the way that critical race theory does, really, it puts us at a huge disadvantage. I think it makes things worse.
Yeah, it really does. You know, it's interesting. I, in talking about the time, which again I said before, I hate the term mixed race, you know, marriages and such. But I think I told this anecdote one time, a long time ago, on one of our previous episodes when we were talking about race. But, you know, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and Columbus, Ohio is, I mean, it's not the Deep South, but I would say that racial tension was a little bit worse there than it is here in Michigan, certainly more so than New York or California and maybe even Colorado, I'm not sure. But I remember back in the late 1970s, I was working at this restaurant. It was kind of a big boy restaurant. This is actually where my wife and I met each other. She was a waitress, I was a waiter, and we've been married now 37 years, but that's where we started dating. But I remember there was this couple that came in. They were regular customers. It was a black man and a white woman. And I hate to say this, but there were only a handful of us that were willing to wait on them. Because a lot of the waiters and waitresses, they were offended by the fact that there's a black man and a white woman, and they thought that was wrong. And of course, my girlfriend, who's now my wife, and myself and a handful of people, these were great customers, and we were the ones who would always wait on them. They were great tippers too, by the way. But I also remember one of my best friends there was the head cook. His name was Brian Crockett. Okay, Brian Crockett was a black man. And we used to make jokes with each other about our, you know, ethnicity, if you will. Okay, you know, he would make jokes about how I couldn't dance. You know, white people can't dance. We just have fun with each other. But he married a white woman, Annette, and they asked me to be their best man. And of course, I was honored to do this. But I got to tell you guys, I caught grief from some of the people in the restaurant. It's like, how can you be the best man at a wedding between a black man and a white woman? And of course, my thing was, you know what? Lighten up, people. What is your problem? Lighten up, bad choice of words. You know, but it's like, what is your problem? So it does seem like we're growing from this, but a lot of these attitudes, John, let me just ask you, because we have about 60 seconds of the break, but right, real quick, some of your thoughts on, I'm glad to see that these attitudes are changing, but we do need to acknowledge that there were people that had these kind of bad attitudes just a generation ago.
Oh, yeah, agreed. Like I said a moment ago, I mean, I grew up in a church that, frankly, would have looked down upon what Roger has as a marriage today, and that's sure, as wrong as anything is. So, yeah, I mean, I grew up with this stuff. I know exactly how that was, and even wondered back then to myself, you know, what is going on here? This doesn't really make sense to me. We're, you know, we're all humans. We're all of the human race, which I appreciate you always saying that, Bob, because we are. I hate the word race, by the way. It just drives me crazy because we're all part of the human race. Do we all have different lines and lineages that we've come from? Absolutely we have, and we should call it that, not race.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, let's do this. We're at the bottom of the hour. The second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast, you can listen to online at crawfordmediagroup.net or wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. And in the second half, we're going to kind of bring it back also to critical race theory being taught in the schools as well as in the military and how seriously wrong this is. And there's a lot more to discuss on critical race theory and, for that matter, racism in general as we continue the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable.
This has been a Crawford Broadcasting production.
Continuing the second half of the National Crawford Roundtable podcast with Roger Marsh of The Bottom Line from the People's Republic of California, John Rush of Rush to Reason from Denver, Colorado, Neil Boron Live from Buffalo, New York, myself, Bob Duco out of Detroit. We're talking all things critical race theory and racism and how we properly contextualize that in our country. One of the things, if I can get... Actually, John, the point you were making right before the break, if I could, I don't want to turn this into a big political thing, but there is a political element of this that I want to at least put out here on the table. What's also not taught in American history classes, political science classes, is the true history of the Republican Party versus the Democratic Party as it relates to race. Most people don't even know. Most African Americans, John, don't even know that the Democratic Party was actually the party of slavery, the party of Jim Crow, the party that fought against Reconstruction.
The KKK.
The founder, right. They had the KKK speaking at Democratic National Conventions. And as a matter of fact, the Frederick Douglass himself, a quote from Frederick Douglass is, the Democratic Party, or no, he said, there is one party that is the party of slavery, and that is the Democratic Party. That was a Frederick Douglass quote, but again, that's a quote you are never going to see in any American history books. And I'll tell you something else. Of the lynchings that were done, most people don't even know this. One-third of the 4,600 or so lynchings that happened in America, one-third of them were white Republicans that were lynched. And that comes straight from the Tuskegee Institute itself. It just seems to me that we ought to be willing to teach this part of American history, because I guarantee you, if this was the history of the Republican Party, it would be in every American history book and political science book in this country, John.
The other thing we should be teaching, Bob, on top of everything you just said, is the fact that they still are the party of slavery. What I mean by that is, when you establish the golden rule, which is the guy with the gold rules, everybody underneath you is no longer a citizen. They are now a subject, and they are emboldened to whatever you hand them or give them or tell them what they can and can't do. The best thing that could ever happen to any ethnicity of individuals on this planet, any human being, period, is the free markets, capitalism, the ability to go out on your own and do whatever you want to do on your own, not beholden to anyone. And yet, that is not what we teach kids today, by the way, of any color, whether they're white, Hispanic, Asian, black, you name it. We don't teach them that. What we teach them is, oh, the government is here to help you. The government is here to take care of you. The government is here to enslave you, is really what they're saying at the end of the day. We don't teach that either, Bob.
Yeah, you know what? That's an excellent point. And Roger, to John's point here, it does seem as though politically this is something that we ought to be willing to talk about and have an open discussion on. It is true that the Democratic Party, their policies, I would argue, not only bigger government perpetuates poverty, and we see that it's African Americans that that experience the lion's share of poverty in this country. Why in the world can't we have an honest discussion about how the Democratic Party policies are more harmful to African Americans? They perpetuate poverty. They keep people on the government dime. Of course, they make it more difficult for African Americans to get their kids out of failing schools because their opposition to voucher programs, because they're in bed with the powerful teachers' unions. Of course, abortion and the genocide that happens in the black wombs of this country. And so there are just so many things, it seems, about the Democratic Party policies in present day that are keeping black people down, yet we can't have this discussion. You talk to 100 black Americans, 95 out of 100 don't even know the information we're talking about because it's completely censored.
And they don't listen to the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean that sincerely, because most people don't. I mean, they really honestly don't. I mean, they don't listen to a program like this or read critically. I came across a meme, just to kind of underscore your point, Bob, comparing Sue Bird from the NBA and LeBron James from the NBA, or WNBA and NBA, and saying, see, he makes more, and that's not fair because he's a man and she's a woman, so therefore. And most people will look at this based on four little statistics and say, oh, gee, you're right, that's not fair. We should be paying her $37 million a year, too, because, well, you know, I mean, that's only fair, isn't it? It's amazing how people define fairness, how they define parity, how they define equality, and now the new buzzword from our own vice president herself, equity, you know, making sure that everybody has. It's amazing how, if you tried to sell communism to American people, most people would not want it. But when you start talking about equity and everybody has the same result and everybody lands in the same place, yeah, that seems fair. That seems right. Well, we have a word for that, and it's communism. I mean, right. It's ridiculous to think how many people don't think. And yet the idea, the things that we're talking about, the history of trying to end slavery in the United States, it's just mind-boggling to me. I can't think of any other way to describe it.
No, it really is. Well, actually, and Neil, I want to get you in on this too. I know, again, we're not trying to turn this episode into a let's bash the Democrats, but you know what? We got to acknowledge the fruit that's produced from their policies, and there have been other oppressed people in this country, not to the level that African Americans experienced, of course. But let's face it, you go back 100, 150 years ago, look at how many newspaper articles for Help Wanted said, okay, but Chinese and Irish need not apply. There were a lot, 100, 120 years ago, there was serious discrimination against Chinese people, against Irish people. Of course, we had Japanese people put in internment camps during World War II. So look at the history that's been done there. But you know something? The Democratic Party did not align themselves and be able to buy the votes of these ethnic groups so much. And so consequently, they haven't been held down the way that black people have in this country, I would argue, by buying into the Democratic Party policies that have bought their votes perpetually, but also kept them in perpetual poverty.
That's right. And people that support those kind of policies are the new slave masters. Somebody referred to this earlier, but Clarence Mason Weaver, he uses a variety of pen names, but Clarence Mason wrote the book, has an entire organization called Leave the Plantation. You can go to leavetheplantation.org. He's an African-American man who says, listen, there's an entire system that's set up to keep people oppressed, and it's called the Democratic Party. And you know, the social programs and the other things that keep people dependent upon the government. And it's not getting smaller, it's getting bigger, which I think is one of the reasons that people began to listen to messages like that during the Trump administration, because they began to say, hey, wait a second, we're getting opportunities here we never had before. All of a sudden, our people are going back to work. They're earning some money. They're having an opportunity to advance in a variety of areas they didn't before. And Donald Trump had a tremendous growth in the amount of support between the first and second time he ran for president. We could talk more about that another time, but you know, that's at the core of this kind of argument. And the bottom line is, black people need to open their eyes and see that over the last, you know, six decades, their position hasn't changed a great deal, particularly when you look at Democratic states with Democratic cities, with Democratic governors and Democratic mayors, places like Chicago, Illinois, the death rate there, the murder rate, even though they've got all the gun laws. How is this working out? Kim Klasick was an African-American woman, right? Ran for Congress in Baltimore. And she had a lot to say about this. She walking down the streets of Baltimore saying, look at this war zone we live in. Is this what we want? Make a change. Vote for a Republican, because they have ideas that work. They don't want to keep people impoverished. And so, you know, ultimately, Clarence Mason and others like him, there are many others like him, say, look, if you want to experience what you're capable of doing, if you want to experience the freedom and the opportunity that's available to you, then stop supporting the Democratic Party. Get off the plantation, in other words. And what did the masters always do? They would tell them, you know, they would tell the slaves, look, if you go out there, you're going to be killed. You have no idea how much I'm protecting you here. I'm providing for you. So you just listen to your master. And they'd say, oh, yeah, that's right. We got to obey Massa. You know, we got to obey that. Right. Well, it needs change. And I think that the real thinking Americans, the kind that listen to this podcast, Roger, are beginning to understand that. It's going to be a slow change, but I really think people are smart enough to understand that that's happening.
Yeah. Well, I think and I hope at the same time that that you're right. And it does seem, though, that before we get off of the political side of this, John, I kind of want to give you a final word on the political side of this, Republican, Democrat. There's got to come a point where the African-American community realizes we got to stop giving 90% of our vote to the Democratic Party, because we've been doing that for 50 years. And after 50 years, yeah,
that's right.
Look where we are. Look at what's happening in Chicago weekend after weekend after weekend under Lori Lightfoot. Okay, do those black lives not matter? Why is that not even newsworthy? This is the fruit that's produced from the Democratic Party. Look at the education standards. Look at the failing schools, the voucher programs. Look at abortion. Look at poverty. Look at government dependency. There's got to come a point where African-American leaders say, maybe, just maybe, the perception that's been created that the Republican Party equals racism and KKK, maybe, just maybe, that's really not true.
And I think, to Neil's point, I do think some of that is starting to shift. I'm interviewing a gentleman today. I've never interviewed him before, by the way. His name is Jimmy Lee Tillman II. He is the founder and president of Martin Luther King Republicans. He's a Heritage Foundation Academy Fellow. He produces his own podcast. He's also in charge of the Jimmy Lee Underground Radio Network. This guy has done a ton to do exactly, guys, what we are talking about in and amongst the people that follow him, and the fact that he is a black man. He has a lot more voice than probably the three of us or the four of us combined do, and he is doing the exact things, Bob, that you're talking about, and I believe there's going to be more and more black leaders that stand up and start telling their own people, hey, guys, enough is enough. We have done this now for, to your point, Bob, 50 plus years with no change. This is not working. We've got to do something different. And by the way, the conservatives have the answers. We need to be on their side of the fence, not the one we're on now.
I got to jump in because this is so pertinent to what we're talking about. During the conversation I had with Clarence Mason about the concept we're describing here, a African-American woman called in. And she said, you're telling me that I'm supposed to listen to Donald Trump, a white millionaire? And his response was, no, I'm telling you to listen to me because I'm a black millionaire. Unbelievable.
What a great point. Well, hey, look, as Donald Trump said when he was campaigning for the black vote, he said, look, after 50 years, what the H do you have to lose? And it's really, it really is a fair point. All right, let's take a short break. We'll continue this conversation next here on the National Crawford Roundtable.
Learn how to walk the narrow path with Steve Gregg. With over 40 years of studying the Bible, Steve Gregg is passionate about teaching you how to apply scriptural wisdom to every aspect of your life. Listen to The Narrow Path on your local Crawford Broadcasting Station or online at thenarrowpath.com. The Narrow Path is 100% listener-supported. Please keep this vital ministry going with your generous financial support. And let them know you heard about The Narrow Path on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, myself, Bob Duco, John Rush, Neil Boron, Roger Marsh, talking about critical race theory and racism in general, race relations. Guys, as we kind of wind down this podcast episode this week, let's kind of bring it back now, full circle, to a discussion on critical race theory itself. We talked about this, how we define it early on. Then we went through a little bit of a history of America, the founding of this nation, the period of slavery and Jim Crow, the political aspect of this as well. But now here we are in present day. And critical race theory, as we all understand, teaches to look at everything today in America through that racial lens of oppressor versus oppressed. And Roger, if I can start with you, how do we combat something like this? Because there are a lot of people today conditioned, especially African Americans, conditioned to see the world here in America right now as systemically racist, systemically oppressor versus oppressed. And if I'm black, well, then that means I'm in the victim oppressed status. No matter where I go, I don't care if it's everything I do, I'm doing while black. How do we break people out of that paradigm?
You know, it's interesting. The critical race theory seems to take everything that would help us break out of that and try to destroy it. You know, when you think about the fact that our faith, for example, tells us that we are all created in the image of God, we're God's image bearers, and so therefore we're part of one race, and so racism shouldn't be separating us. So we shouldn't be treating anyone differently based on the color of their skin or their ethnicity. And yet the critical race theory says, you know, we're going to basically take a hammer to your religion. We're going to go after your family. I mean, look at what's happened in the family unit. And I'm not just talking about African-American families. I'm talking about American families. If the out-of-wedlock birth rate is now over 40%, I mean, basically one out of every two kids born in the United States. I mean, Neil, congratulations on the new granddaughter. I think it's awesome. But your family is a statistical anomaly, because for every one of your granddaughters that were born, there's another kid that's born out of wedlock, not to loving married parents. And economists will show us that, you know, the reality is, if you want to succeed in life, you graduate from high school, you get married before you start having a family, you have your career, you know, set. Even if it's not a high-paying job, you have a much better trajectory of doing better. So critical race basically says, look, we're going after your family, we're going after your faith, and then, oh, by the way, too, your country's all whacked out. You know, I mean, it's a complete mess. And the thing that I think has led to such American greatness, in spite of the wrong steps that we've taken and the missteps, that's even coming into question now, too, by saying we have to throw the whole thing out. And so the name of the game, I think, for us is to keep speaking the truth, keep speaking it in love. And if there were ever a time for evangelism, now is the time. Not evangelism to say, hey, let's just flush CRT, but to say, look, we're all sinners. We all can't save ourselves. We need a Savior. We need salvation. And that salvation is there. It's right. I mean, God has literally got his hand out saying, tap me in. I mean, it's right there. I mean, for us to receive.
It so is. You know, John, I think about our kids being taught this critical race theory in the schools, and it amazes me that here we are in 2021, and we are in essence forming and creating an increased racial tension new generation. We're teaching children right now, 5 and 6 year old kids, look out of the corner of your eye at that white person / black person and see them as white or see them as black. And we're creating this sense of tension between them among these kids. And we're going to be seeing the fruit of this critical race theory 20 years from now in the workforce, in the military, in our culture, society, and politics. It seems as though the division is going to get even worse and worse and worse. I'm glad to see some parents are speaking up against this, but I think this is child abuse. We're teaching black kids not to trust their white friends, and we're teaching white friends to, in essence, resent their black friends and accuse their black friends of looking at them with suspicion as well. And so I see a backlash among whites, where whites are going to feel like, you know what, enough is enough. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of black people looking at me this way. And it's like, wait a minute here. Here we are. Now we're teaching white kids to say, I'm sick of black people doing this. We're teaching black kids to say, I'm sick of white people having done this to me and my parents and my family. And it's like, why in the world don't 90% of African Americans clearly say, hey, stop it. You're just making things worse.
Because we've had a literal brainwashing of individuals for a very, very long time. And you guys know this. It's been in our public education system now for some 50 plus years. Again, the CRT is not new. It's been in our education system for quite some time. It's being highlighted or resurfaced again, if you would. Of late, and you know, some of the questions that they're asking kids. In fact, the lawsuit of the lady that I talked to yesterday in Nevada, you know, some of the things that they're requiring the kids to answer are, you know, supposedly this list is supposed to be private, but, you know, what's your race, ethnicity, nationality, your gender, your socioeconomic status, your sexual orientation, your disabilities, your religion, your age, what language do you speak, and so on. I mean, they're subtly getting these people, Bob, to do exactly what you just said a moment ago. It is brainwashing. And guys, I know this might sound far-fetched to a lot of individuals, but I believe in my heart this is part of the communist playbook to take over a country. And we are in about the third to fourth stage of that, with only one more to go, and we're there, folks.
All right, let's take another quick break, and we'll pick it up from there next. More of the National Crawford Roundtable coming up.
Dr. Michael Youssef leads the way for people living in spiritual darkness to discover the light of Jesus Christ. This tremendous outreach begins with the proclamation of God's Word through the uncompromising biblical teaching of Dr. Michael Youssef. Leading the Way is here to equip and strengthen the church to stand strong and to advance the gospel in today's ever-changing world. Listen to Leading the Way with Dr. Michael Youssef at ltw.org/listen, and be sure to mention you heard about their program on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
And winding down this National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, myself, Bob Duco, John Rush, Neil Boron, Roger Marsh. Neil, what about that and the fact that our kids are being taught basically to look at their friends through the racial lens? What really troubles me, it's bad enough this happening in society, but we're seeing this more and more in the church. And I'm going to ask you to put your pastor's hat on right now, Neil, certainly you and Roger, but this ought not be this way in the body of Christ, but we know that it is. We know, as the old cliche goes, Sunday morning is the most segregated time in America. That's not just a cliche. That's actually really true. There are white churches and black churches. Yes, you have a mix within the two, but let's be honest. Most churches you go into are either 80% white, 80-90% white, or 80-90% black. It ought not be that way, but it's that way in the body of Christ as well. How do we finally, once and for all, break through this?
Well, I think we need to take a look at ourselves. I mean, Matthew 7, I believe it's verse 5, Jesus is saying, look at, you know, you're worried about the speck in somebody else's eye, but what about the log that's in your own? I think this is what Roger said. This is a wonderful time for the church to wake up and see that we have an opportunity to demonstrate what the gospel actually looks like. Jesus died one time for all people. He died for the unjust. He, of course, was sinless, but he died for the unjust. Who's that? That's everybody. All have sinned, no matter what the color of your skin is, no matter what your ethnicity. So Jesus Christ died once for all. 1 Peter 3:18 tells us that. But then I'm also thinking about, I believe it's Galatians 3:28, there is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, there's neither male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. That's the core message of the gospel. So when you're right, Bob, I mean, there's still a lot of segregation, even in the church. I think the church needs to say, do we have a log in our eye? This is an opportunity for us to shine the light of Christ. And by the way, you hear a lot of people talking about how dark the world is becoming. I mean, you look at the critical race thing, you look at other issues that are going on in the world, and you say, it's just becoming so dark. But darkness is really just the absence of light. So the question has to be asked, is the world actually becoming darker, or is the church and the light of Christ becoming dimmer? And so I just think that as believers, even as individual believers, because we can't always just say, well, the church needs to do this. I think as individuals, we need to say, Lord, is there anything in my heart that represents racism? How can I better demonstrate the love that you had for all mankind, for the entire human race, as John referred to earlier? Like, how can I do that more effectively? And would you give me opportunities to do it? Would you continue to refine me and change me more into the image of Christ, because I want to be better at this? And I think that honestly, it has to begin in each individual heart, like Toby Mac sings the song, starts with me. It's got to start somewhere. It's got to start with us as individuals.
Yeah, you know what? You're absolutely right. Actually, John, if you think about it, if we're not careful, we could start to, as I hate to say, white people, start to develop racist feelings that weren't there naturally, but that's end right. up just being a backlash to that's the right. constant hypersense. It's like you can only have so many African-American liberal progressives on TV going, you white people are oppressive, you white people, until eventually you start getting white people going, you know what, I'm sick of how these black people today are, and then you go, wait a minute, what am I doing? Listen how I'm talking. What's happening here? I got to tell you, John, I've talked to white friends of mine before who have told me, I'm getting so frustrated with all of this. I'm finding myself having racial feelings I've never had before, and I'm ashamed and frustrated, but I'm sickened by the fact that this is being generated in me by this kind of racial hyper-focus.
And you're right. And I think it is something that we especially, you know, Christians, leaders, and there's a lot of folks listening to us, folks that I understand don't have the same faith that we have. I get that. But even as just leaders, conservative leaders, you know, folks that really do understand and get what's going on right now, guys, we have to be careful to not fall into that trap, because that's right. what it is. And I mean, it's a trap because it is by design as that's to right. what they want to do. They want us pitted against one another. So we have to resist those temptations of saying, wait a minute, time out. You know, I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to be, you know, against fellow man of any kind, of any color, of any ethnicity. And we have to be careful of that and realize that it's not themselves that are perpetuating this, but it is the powers that be, the folks that are, you know, the puppet masters out there that are doing this. And by the way, folks, I'll be the first to tell you, it's coming right from our own White House right now. They're the ones that are perpetuating all of this nonsense. And we have to be the ones to fight back and say, no, we are not going to go down that path.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me, well, we're just about out of time here. In our last few minutes, I would like to talk to you guys specifically about the military, because as you know, critical race theory is being promoted in the military as well. General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who needs to be fired, by the way, and court-martialed, but that's a completely separate debate. Mark Milley, as you know, in June of this year, testifying before Congress, was defending the whole idea of critical race theory being taught in the military and saying, I need to understand my white rage. It's like, oh my goodness, come on. But here's the troubling thing for me. I think about our military, the what's called unit cohesion, and how important it is that soldiers have their backs consistently. And Roger, I want to ask you about this. On the battlefield, you cannot, you must not be thinking of your comrade in arms through the lens of, okay, well, now is that person white who looks down on me and has oppressed me? Is that person black who suspects me and thinks that I consider myself superior? And that kind of nonsense should not be part of the mix in the U.S. military of all places, yet that's being injected in the military right now. And it just seems to me that this is a dangerous thing, especially if we go in times of war. Is there actually going to be a debate about, you know, if a black soldier is there on the ground, and it's like you never leave a soldier behind, and now that white soldier, will he give a thought to skin color when he decides how much of his life he's going to risk to try to save his comrade in arms, or vice versa, it's a white soldier laying there. They ought not be thinking about things like this, but they're being taught to think of each other based on their skin color. And I just find it disgusting, Roger, that this is happening in the United States military. North Korea, China, Russia, Iran, they have to be laughing at us.
Yeah, well, laughing, but also kind of licking their chops, saying, boy, this is great. If the best army in the world, the best army in the history of the world, is now in foxholes running around going, gee, do I protect that guy? Because have we been, you know, we've got the best diversity training of any military institution.
Yeah, would he save my life? I'll save his, but would he risk his life for me?
Exactly. You know, and this is the whole, the issue I was thinking as Neil was sharing about, you know, the culture that we're in right now. I was thinking about Proverbs 17 and, you know, a friend loves at all times and a brother is born for adversity. And the fact that when it comes to racist type of overtones or, you know, people who are dealing with this type of stuff, one of the best witnesses we can have is to stand up for, you know, stand up against it and stand up for somebody who's being truly oppressed. But at the same time, in terms of the military issue here, my goodness, I mean, the fact that we have gotten to the point where the diversity training has led us to start thinking in those terms. I mean, let's face it, it's not like this hasn't happened before. You know, I mean, I'm sure there were times all throughout American history where we had black soldiers fighting alongside white soldiers, and the white soldiers would kind of look and say, whoops, you know, I mean, that's a horrible thing to say, but where they wouldn't, you know, wouldn't defend the honor of their fellow soldiers. But now that they're being trained to not think that way, I mean, that was just mankind's hatred against mankind showing up. But now when it becomes part of the DNA, this goes back to that critical theory idea that says, hey, you know, these institutions, I mean, they really are oppressive. So yeah, maybe we need a military, but maybe we don't. Maybe if we just burn this thing down like everything else because it's oppressive. And you wind up not having a country because now there is no police force.
That's
now
right.
There is no army. There is no military application because we would rather be politically correct and watch it all burn rather than actually have it in place and say, hey, if there's problems here, if there are bad cops, let's root them out. If there's racist soldiers, let's root them out. But we can't make that the driving force when the name of the game is, hey, when you're being confronted by an enemy, you've got to be able to fight them militarily.
Yeah, so true, so true. Well, I'll tell you what, we look at the clock, kind of coming to the end of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast. I know it's a very sensitive issue, certainly, but let's purpose, folks, to remember that as believers in Christ especially, there is no Jew nor Greek, there is no slave nor free, there is no male nor female. And if I can use contemporary language, I think the Apostle Paul would clearly say there is no white or black in Christ Jesus.
That's right.
Okay, we're all made in the image and likeness of God. We have different appearances, different family groups. This is part of the separation of the Tower of Babel and people going off in the different lands. But we all are the same human beings, and it falls to us, the body of Christ, to make sure not to fall into the traps and the tricks of the enemy that I think is working through a lot of politicians right now to divide us even more in this way. So anyway, it's a very, very good and interesting discussion. We always appreciate you folks listening to us. You can listen online at CrawfordMediaGroup.net and listen to previous episodes as well, or wherever you listen to us in podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. We get a lot of 5-star reviews. We appreciate that. If you folks would review the podcast, we always appreciate your willingness to do this. And Roger Marsh of The Bottom Line from the People's Republic of California, John Rush of Rush to Reason from Denver, Colorado, Neil Prodigal Son Boron back with us finally again of Neil Boron Live from Buffalo, New York, myself, Bob Duco out of Detroit. Guys, always great catching up with you. Thank you so much. We'll see you. Well, I won't see you next week. I'll be on vacation. So, you know, we never trash each other behind our backs when we're gone. That's a standing rule, right? Yeah, right. Okay.
Don't worry, we would never.
Don't worry,
that'll never happen. Anyway, great catching up with you guys. Thanks a lot. We'll see you.
Thanks, Bob.
Likewise. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. God bless.
This has been the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Download and subscribe to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Apple users can rate the podcast, and we'd appreciate your 5-star rating. National Crawford Roundtable Podcast returns with a new discussion each week. Be sure to watch for the notification on your podcast app. This has been a Crawford Media Group production.